Ignite your curiosity with Austin Next. We're watching Austin transform from a thriving ecosystem into a global superstar. With our host, Jason Scharf, we aspire to better comprehend the true nature of innovation. Together, we will uncover what makes a successful ecosystem and navigate the technologies shaping our future. Now let's dive into What's Next?
How does a nonprofit innovate and scale the mission? One possible answer is to go beyond delivering grants and open a corporate venture arm. Joining me today is Alice Pomponio, Vice President of Innovation and Impact Investing at the American Cancer Society and Managing Director of Bright Edge, the ACS's mission-driven venture capital and impact investment arm. When I first met Alice at South by Southwest, my initial comment was, Bright Edge is weird but interesting. And those two words coupled together can be quite innovative. Alice is an impact investor, social innovation entrepreneur, and patient advocate with extensive experience in life sciences and business, coupled with her passion for the American Cancer Society's life-saving mission. Her American Cancer Society volunteer leadership includes past chair of the Eastern New England Board of Directors and national board member of American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. She is on the faculty at Harvard, MIT, HST Sloan Healthcare Ventures, where she teaches biomedical innovation and healthcare entrepreneurship. Before joining Bright Edge, Alice advised early-stage life science companies in go-to-market strategy while at Red Sky Partners and held prior R&D and commercial leadership roles at Radius Health, AstraZeneca, and Sanofi Genzyme, where she launched multiple U.S. and global specialty products and championed orphan drug policy and health equity initiatives across the globe. She has led open innovation and public-private partnerships that have transformed specialty medicine's development. Her public sector experience spans innovation, trade, and healthcare policy through roles in the UK government and US Office of Management and Budget. She holds a Master of Public Policy from Harvard University and a Bachelor of Science in Biology from MIT. Alice serves on the boards of Massachusetts Biotechnology Council, MassEcon, and Phage Pro Inc. Enjoy my conversation with Alice. Alice, welcome to Austin Next.
Thanks, Jason. Good to be here.
So we met at South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. I had heard about the American Cancer Society's venture arm before we had met. And I will say what I said then, with the grants, the venture arm, the accelerator you're launching, it's weird, interesting, but weird in the way that I think about these kind of nonprofits starting to get more involved in innovation. So why don't we first start with, tell me about what's Bright Edge, what's the accelerator, how does this kind of work in with the grants? You know, just a small question.
Yeah. Well, thanks. And it's kind of like, is it funny, haha, or funny, strange? And so weird in this situation sounds like a compliment, and I'll take it. And yes, you know, American
Cancer. You can say novel.
Novel, you know. Yes. Alternative. I mean, all the things actually why South By was really exciting for me and my team to attend. And it's kind of a new place for ACS too. It's all about thinking outside the box, really engaging with different communities and technologies in new ways. And so, yeah, it is novel. It is absolutely novel. But to get back to your original question, which is what is Bright Edge and how are we thinking about innovation? You know, American, if you believe that innovation, you know, has its roots in scientific discovery, I think that then there's no surprise that American Cancer Society should have a stake in innovation because we're the largest non-governmental funder of cancer research. You're talking about $5 billion granted to date, 50 Nobel laureates, 1,100 institutions, and 25,000 researchers, many of them at the beginning of their, you know, careers. And in fact, Texas is one of the top funded states for American Cancer Society, and we can talk more about that later. I guess where it gets novel is really in the country's largest cancer charity that also is in 5,000 communities providing safety net services, right? Like free lodging, free rides, the national call center, and then also influencing, you know, clinical practice. So public health guidelines, and then also the advocacy. The idea that it would want to get more involved and exercise its differentiated capabilities in the translation of scientific discovery to help solve some of the problems that we were actually doing on the nonprofit side, that is pretty novel. And so our kind of legacy in science and what we would have called innovation in the past was really more scientific excellence. It was around like high impact publications, you know, award-winning scientists. I think with BrightEdge, what we did was we brought the outside in and we said, hey, you know, actually there are products that are being, you know, become commercially available because of the research that ACS had funded at its earliest stages. Some of the people that we funded actually went on to go found those companies and then, you know, went on and did great things. And that the ecosystem actually could use more entrepreneurial ways to address some of these big social impact problems that affect cancer and the ability to have equitable outcomes across all populations and all cancer types. So that's, I think, the novel piece is that BrightEdge is really helping ACS innovate its model, as well as work with really cool, innovative startups to deliver ACS's mission in new ways.
Well, and one of the things I want to challenge a little bit is I think one avenue of innovation is science. And yeah. I think that that's generally been the bio and health arena of innovation. It's product innovation. We create a new drug, a new device, a new diagnostic, and keep pushing the envelope there. I think at the same time, the innovations on the product side have gotten so novel, whether it be CRISPR therapies, whether it be just how much GLP-1s are changing things, that the business model, the care delivery, that side of the equation doesn't know what to do with them. It doesn't know, when I hear about, we have all of these crazy payment methods to figure out how to deal with a cure, when you have like the sickle cell anemia drug from Vertex, it kind of steps back and says, okay, maybe we need more innovation on that side to kind of catch things. And I think cancer being more targeted, give me some rope on the time, but it was something like, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, you know, blood cancer was leukemia and lymphoma, and that was it. That was the entire, you know, and today it's whatever. It's like 47 or 50 different types because we realize that, you know, it's cancer's not geographic. It's actually a genomic disease. So how is BrightEdge, when what you're funding and what you're looking at, think about that side of the equation? Or is it all, here's the next great therapeutic, here's the next great, you know, diagnostic?
Yeah. I mean, you're hitting the nail right on the head, which is, you know, 75 years ago, 100 years ago, cancer was just a death sentence. There was no conversation. It was say your goodbyes. And it was still very much in, let's understand this disease. Oh, now we know it's 200 different diseases and they mutate, they change, they escape therapeutic response, all the things that you described. But on top of that, you know, we are seeing really alarming trends where disparities continue to rise, despite the fact that we have curative therapies, novel therapies that are available. That's absolutely unacceptable. And I think that's really where, you know, when we think of the ability for American Cancer Society to bring all of its capabilities, whether they be on the pure play science side, as well as on our understanding of what is truly impact, meaning what's the problems that we have to solve in the ecosystem. And like you said, when you start looking at them at a population level, at a health system level, or even at a market level, meaning like, VCs have not been as excited about prevention, wellness, and early detection screening technologies as they have been with, you know, precision oncology therapeutics. So we need to solve for that, and we need to bring, you know, these strategic capabilities to bear in completely new ways. So I think it's an and equation, meaning that we can be thinking about innovation through the lens of American Cancer Society. How do we harness innovation to scale and sustain mission? And that's kind of twofold when you think of BrightEdge, because we are a VC investor as well as a, you know, enabler through the accelerator programs, and also, you know, deploying some really unique capabilities on the asset management side of things when we think of how do you measure non-financial performance towards ACS's mission, it could give more people confidence to invest in the areas of greatest need. Then I think what you're seeing is we can deliver towards those goals, those clinical provider payer barriers by helping American Cancer Society bring in a alternative stream of income to be able to sustain a lot of the safety net programs that people depend on, hospitals depend on, patients depend on. We can also help drive mission delivery through really novel companies and actually completely break out of the mold of a philanthropically funded, you know, charitable model where money comes in, money goes out through grants or through, you know, the charity funded and run programs, and really not see any sustainability there because we know that the supply is not going to meet the demand.
Right. So getting into the specifics on BrightEdge itself, so how would you describe at the 10,000 foot level, the thesis, what stage are you investing in, check sizes, types of companies, do you lead or follow?
Yeah. So BrightEdge is the innovation and venture capital arm of the American Cancer Society. We invest in oncology focused, not necessarily oncology specific, private companies, early stage. Our focus is mostly seed to series A. And what I'm really proud about is that we are paying homage to the totality of American Cancer Society's mission, right? So American Cancer Society aims to end cancer as we know it for everyone. There's a strong health equity component there. BrightEdge invests across the entire cancer care continuum, which means we do therapeutics, devices, diagnostics, and even tech, from prevention, wellness, detection, screening, treatment, all the way to survivorhood. And for us, it's really about, you know, can we see a path forward through a traditional VC lens, meaning, you know, we are not concessionary. We are here to help American Cancer Society fund its operations. But also, can we deepen the impact of these companies through really blended investments? So the BrightEdge financial investment combined with American Cancer Society's know-how. So the strategic value and insights and connectivity that we bring because we are part of ACS. So today, the ACS Impact Venture Fund, we are actually also part of a responsible investment strategy for American Cancer Society. We're the manager of the VC allocation of the investment pool. So American Cancer Society does a negative screen, no tobacco in the portfolio. Mm-hmm. We are the positive screen of mission forward impact investing that still contributes towards, you know, the overall portfolio investment strategy. So 21 investments that AIVF has made. We're about $80 million in fund size, and we've already had 5 exits. And all of those companies, thank you, you know, ladder up to the impact that we're hoping to achieve for ACS broadly.
I'm curious of the 5 exits, and given the time that you've been around, is there a theme around them? Do they all, has it all been like early stage success of therapeutics in phase one getting bought, or is it, they're all different? How has it kind of looked? Because obviously that what's exiting fast and success is obviously going to color what you do in the future.
Yep. So you've got a couple of different strategies at play, and I've only been at BrightEdge since 2021, and we really relaunched it in 2022. So some of those exits were earlier stage investments that happened at a later stage in the company's, you know, sort of life cycle and growth. And we were very fortunate to have one diagnostic company, one AIML radiology pathology, so more of a tech company, actually two tech companies, and then a therapeutic company that had been acquired. So they're very, very different paths, mm-hmm. if you will. But as we looked at what we really want to achieve through BrightEdge, we realized that earlier stage investing did make more sense for us. One, you know, because when we think of our additionality, meaning the ability to really help inform critical product strategy and design decisions, you know, when we get involved too late, those are already done. You know, then we're just a name on the cap table and we're not really able to influence or activate around the opportunity. So earlier from that standpoint does actually play into our overall impact thesis of how do we help the best science make it to as many patients in as frictionless way as possible. And then for those types of companies that are really in the zone of channeling ACS's mission, how do we get involved early enough to really help them scale and grow and catalyze more investors towards them? And so what you're seeing now is that combined with our acknowledgement that we have such tremendous deal flow coming from the grantee alumni ecosystem that, you know, we actually are term sheet zero in some of those companies. And we were not participating at all until it was almost, you know, too expensive for American Cancer Society to get involved. And so that's why seed Series A for ACS Impact Venture Fund, the VC investing. And then with the accelerators, we are now some of the first dollars into very, very early stage companies.
So that's a great result. My next question was, you recently announced the Texas accelerator. One is that the first? Do you have a number of other ones? And then how do you see the accelerator fitting into this whole thing?
Yeah. I mean, it is the first regional innovation hub for BrightEdge, and we're so, so excited and grateful to Lyda Hill Philanthropies and Lyda in particular for really seeing the opportunity and being a real thought partner for us. And so as we considered, you know, obviously the missed opportunity, we had done analysis a couple of years ago and found that American Cancer Society touched over 60% of all of the venture-backed Series A to C deals in oncology worth over $10 million between 2019 and 2021, 60%.
Wow.
Half of those were founded by ACS grantee alums, and then the other half were being advised by research professors. So, you know, that's like significant footprint, $3.4 billion raised in the capital markets. You know, if we had participated in that, maybe our whole fundraising model, you know, would have been transformed immediately.
The joke is always the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, and the next best time is now. If we have a time machine, you could have gone back and made these decisions, but you know, going forward, you're doing it now.
Hindsight's 2020, right? Exactly. But more to look forward to than to look back on, in my opinion, because the best is yet to come. When we look at Texas, and this was the exercise we did with Lyda Hill and her team, was that we found we're not seeing equitable yield and productivity across all of our grantees. And so Texas is in the top 10 states where we have grants, active grants. I think there's over 300 million that we've granted in Texas. We did not see the same number of companies that were being formed and moving, you know, into the top tiers of company success. Why is that? Right? You know, because this is also great science that we knew at the time of granting should have impact for patients, but it's not getting picked up by VCs. It doesn't have the right teams forming around them. And so that was, I think, the aha combined with Lyda's passion for really growing, you know, the Texas biotech ecosystem, all of the economic development. And then you layer on top of that, you know, amazing public sector investment through CPRIT, the Cancer Prevention Research Institute of Texas. It just felt like a win-win where we could leverage the footprint that we already had through our granting base. On top of that, a lot of the other patient support programs we've been running in Texas, and then bring the wider ecosystem, right? Whether it was things that we see that maybe had not considered Texas as a location for operations, as well as helping Texas-based entities access our wider network of knowledge capital and experts. So Lyda's gift allows us to set up a 2-year pilot program where we will be doing both academic grant funding for proof of concept to help scientists get it to a stage where it could be seriously considered by VCs, as well as invest in Texas-based companies for equity.
So what's the structure of the accelerator in terms of the offering? I mean, when you talk about, is it in person? Is it curriculum based, mentor? Like, how is it actually going to be set up? Or it could be in progress for all I know.
It absolutely is in progress because we only announced the gift last year. We're in the process of announcing the team. The grant review process is going to lean heavily on what ACS already does very, very well. So because about $180 million gets granted every year from ACS, you know, the Texas applicants will go through the same type of grant review process, which is actually more thorough than the NCI's process. And on top of that, we have some, you know, differentiated and diversified views. Like we have a patient perspective, you know, on the granting committee. So any of the Texas applicants will go through that same process. They will just get funded from, you know, a restricted pool of funds. And then for the companies, I think we're really excited about working with local ecosystem partners on how we do that, because it doesn't have to be limited to therapeutics or cancer biology companies. And you and I talked when we were in South By that, you know, there's tremendous opportunity in the convergence of tech and life sci. There's those more, you know, system level, consumer facing, you know, opportunities to drive improved cancer survival. So I would say it's TBD. It's really TBD.
And how do you think about the then complete synergy between ACS granting, the accelerator, the VC fund? Is this basically a funnel, the way to think about it, where we're going to, most of the deal flow is going to be coming from the current grantees? In theory, they go through the accelerator and then you go and fund them through the VC fund. Are they separate, really separate things that may have some interplay? How are you thinking about kind of as all the things come together?
Yeah. I mean, sort of my gut is that we have this really vibrant, but it's still a very open innovation ecosystem that ACS is able to convene. I mean, look, that's one of the things that we do well on even the fundraising side and the volunteer side. We know how to build communities. Sadly, cancer actually is a common enemy bonding moment. People like to come together around cancer. They'll probably like to come together around cancer and innovation and investing. And then we know how to, you know, drive consensus. And so that's really informing great decisions. And whether it's our own investing, or even helping, you know, other investors, co-investors get excited about the things that we think are really cool. That I think is going to is how this is going to play out. So for sure, we are engineering our own deal flow for BrightEdge ACS Impact Venture Fund investing. But I think we're also engineering great deal flow for others. And so I imagine it'll be like what we're seeing with the BrightEdge Entrepreneurs Program. That's not a place-based effort that's nationwide, not limited to any one institution, and also not limited to ACS grantees, although about 50% of our entrepreneurs cohort are former grantees, really surrounding them with, again, you know, the knowledge capital and the insights and strategic capabilities that ACS can bring to bear, and allowing these folks to really transcend any constraints that they might have, being in a single institution or being, you know, in a silo when it comes to a particular technology or research discipline.
Well, you say that a lot of them, we think about the pure science, and I'm assuming that a lot of the grants are going to people currently within academic institutions. And one of obviously the big challenges with those academic institutions, I'll be honest, without even looking past the rhetoric, is getting those innovations out, right? Yeah. It's a process that's frankly a lot more difficult, I think, than it should be. How does ACS play into this? How is it one of these things like, hey, this is, we've got, you know, a gravity on the other side. You need to be able to help get these things out of the institutions faster. Does the ACS grants themselves help in any way, or is it just everybody's kind of fighting that individual battle themselves?
Yeah. I want to think about that a little bit more because, you know, speed used to be, I think, the only right gear that people would want to shift into. And it was all about faster progress, stealth companies, you know, we have the IP, extending the patent life. Like, I think all that still applies because, you know, cancer patients can't wait, right? Mm-hmm. If you are in a situation where there is no, you know, commercially available treatment, then a clinical trial could be your standard of care. And it is just so, you know, heart-wrenching. And we often say, even in our investing teams, that we always want to keep the patient in the room, because dollars that are going to work through these cool startup companies means that, you know, a patient might not have access to rides or lodging that they might need, you know, in their treatment battle today. So the speed is not the only kind of gear that we want to shift into, because it's also the intentionality, right? And being as specific as possible around what is the innovation bottleneck that these companies or technologies are facing. So absolutely, you know, the fact that some technologies are stuck in universities and in labs because they don't have access even to these types of accelerator programs, right? So if you're at Harvard or MIT, you might have even your choice of accelerator programs and entrepreneur support. If you're maybe in, you know, Texas or in Colorado, you might not have anything. And so now at least they have access to BrightEdge. I think beyond that, what we can do through our founder level support and the wraparound services is really give folks access to the networks. So that's going to help them with their connections. But also, you know, have line of sight downstream and think around the corner in terms of what are some of those, you know, provider, payer, even clinical development barriers that they should be thinking about in advance to help make that glide path towards commercialization more seamless. And then lastly, with American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, you know, a lot of times things get stuck because there's lack of belief or lack of, you know, kind of market viability. And that's an example where our advocacy has actually created new businesses, new marketplaces. So navigation was never a reimbursed service. Now, you know, with changes in legislation, navigation is reimbursed. And so now there's going to be all these companies that can actually sell navigation enablement products. So that would be an example of where we can be market shaping and market building on top of all of the, you know, more traditional innovation support.
How do you think about alignment of the goals of ACS versus the goals of the company? You mentioned that you had, you know, you were being measured on non-financial metrics as well. And so it comes a lot to my, from my perspective of, I'm slightly suspect, and this is from a place of knowing that things want to happen well, of non-profit oriented accelerators and the like, more because the metrics and the goals that people have aren't necessarily aligned. So the example I always like to give is, okay, if a city is creating a nonprofit accelerator, the metric that they're working off of is jobs created, while the startup is working off of, you know, growth and value creation. Those two things could line up, but if I want to hire 1,000 people, the city will love that. The startup might not be the best things for it. So how do you think about that alignment, and what are those other metrics of success that you are looking at besides, you know, pure financial returns?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's real. It's absolutely real. There can be tension in the model. And so having a rubric, a framework to ensure that the decision-making is standardized and rational throughout is really critical. So for us, it's really initially the mission lock. And so we do that through our investment strategy. So we have 11 mission thematic areas that we identified through consensus driven, you know, documents, the three blueprints: cancer research, cancer control, and social determinants of health. And from that, we came up with, you know, these 11 areas. They fall into four buckets. So novel therapeutics diagnostics is only one of the four, then treatment optimization, infrastructure, R&D, commercial infrastructure, clinical infrastructure, and then social outcomes. Within each, then there's a slightly different investment sort of thesis and maybe innovation bottleneck. And so then we can be really precise. So I guess my point is, it's all about the why, meaning why are we investing in this space? And then when we get to the what and the how, trying to be as precise and specific as possible as to how ACS shows up. Because once we agree on the why, and in fact, we even set up governance around this, we as BrightEdge want to be as, you know, joined at the hip with American Cancer Society when it comes to mission. So if we say this company X is addressing financial barriers to care in a way that American Cancer Society also sees the problem, then, you know, that's actually our silent contract with ACS to say, this is why you know, we can invest strategic know-how behind this company because it's going to deliver the same outcomes that we would do on the C3 side. So it's really in that upfront selection, ensuring mission lock, such that then we can go to town when it comes to really propelling the company into what might be seen as traditional commercial success. But it comes back to, well, what makes it into the BrightEdge portfolio? Because we want combined returns, blended returns, financial and mission. And then we aim to measure that through the cancer impact investment framework.
How do you think about maintaining agility, maintaining innovation within both BrightEdge and ACS itself? Because, I mean, one of the things we've been seeing, like whatever numbers you want to see, like the NIH, the R-naught grant age is going up. The, you know, we're not necessarily funding cutting edge science as much just because it's not, what's the way I want to put it? It's not as easily seen, right? There's almost a counterculture nature to true innovation, which is not going to necessarily be invested in through the more traditional means. I mean, I had a whole episode called on decentralized science, where some of the backlash to this is you have new institutions like the Arcadia Institute or VitaDAO, also had the Foresight Institute on. And so as ACS, I don't know off the top of my head how old ACS is, but I'm guessing it's at least 50 years, if not more. How we think about avoiding that sclerosis and that drift that happens as we're seeing just across institutions right now.
Yeah. So American Cancer Society is 110 years old.
Yeah. So,
which is amazing. And with that comes, you know, that brand household recognition, but also the integrity and that, you know, depth of knowledge. I guess BrightEdge is that for ACS, right? You know, the idea that we are not setting up bespoke programs that then are rolled out around the country, you know, we're able to identify, screen, and filter through, you know, our deal flow, some of the most up and coming technologies, invest in technologies, right? You know, I think a lot of our resources are being put to general awareness on the American Cancer Society side. We can put them into specific companies. And the incentives, as you just described, are there because, you know, the market is very good at driving performance. You know, the other investors around the table expect it. So I think the nimbleness really comes back to us having that compass and knowing where and when to strike, right? Like there's smart money in the room, there's dumb money in the room. We want to be the wise money in the room, right? We want to be able to say, this is really a problem that's pretty well defined. And we have a lot of material insights about that. In fact, we even have some operating knowledge as to how we've had to fill a gap. And when it comes to us selecting companies, that gets pronounced. Then when it comes to how we might guide and mentor and shape those companies moving forward, I think it's nimble, but in a more stealth way. Yeah.
Well, and then I also see how we deal with the larger organization. I mean, I hope what I'm saying is true. Given the bio innovations that we are seeing going right now, I think the quote unquote cure for cancer, now whether that's early, you know, early diagnostics like Grail, Freenome, et cetera, or that is targeted therapy, whatever subset of therapies and diagnostics coming together is within our sight. And so then the question is, when you think about mission driven versus, again, that bureaucratic institution driven, should that not say then, when we hit that, ACS throws a parade and goes away? What do you see kind of from a cultural perspective if that kind of, from that mentality versus, you know, the concern I have is always of scope creep of a lot of organizations.
Yeah. Well, you know, ACS is a very different organization. And my journey to American Cancer Society, while I worked in the biopharma space, it actually was a personal one. My family's been ravaged by cancer. We've had seven different types of cancer, 14 battles over 12 years.
Oh, man.
And then even my mother sadly didn't seek care. Standard of care would have been great, but she was uninsured at the time. So within one family, we've had huge disparities because of the type of cancer, when someone was diagnosed, where they lived, what they could afford. And I think to your point, yes, you know, there is tremendous reason to celebrate cancer innovation and the cures that we are seeing. I would argue, you know, some of those business models are not sustainable in terms of the cost. They're not even accessible. And not even the cost. They may not be really available to large audiences because of the infrastructure, you know, consumption that's needed or the limited centers that can offer certain procedures. And then keep in mind, you know, we're continuing to see disparities increase. We're seeing earlier onset of cancer, younger patients, colorectal cancer, lung cancer. We have a ton of data that just came out in the Global Facts and Figures around, you know, the rise of cancers that are preventable, that are detectable. If a Black woman gets a breast cancer diagnosis, she is 40% less likely to survive than a white woman. There's still a lot of work to do. And so that makes me think, yes, there will be. In fact, I almost want American Cancer Society's walks and galas to be just that, to be celebratory. And we do them for community building. We don't do them for, you know, our operating budget. We do them because we can educate and we can convene community. I think moving forward, we do need to represent the unrepresented in innovation and investing and find ways to democratize so that more great talent and innovation can go to some of the biggest challenges facing the most vulnerable and underserved populations.
Well, and we are seeing, I think, this nonprofit change into how they approach innovation. Because I know that like the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation also has a venture arm. And so this seems to be something that people are starting to think about. Do you see this as a growing trend?
I do. And I applaud all of the nonprofits that are thinking about how do they diversify, you know, their financial base, their funding base. That's definitely a motivator. It was a motivator, the initial motivator for American Cancer Society. I always, you know, when people come to us and say, how did you build Bright Edge? And we want to do the same. I always caution them and say, you know, do a little bit of reflection first, because our model is so different. To your point about, can't we just pack up and celebrate? You know, American Cancer Society is pan-cancer. And we are U.S. wide. So that's a really big burden, right? You know, I do say
pack up and celebrate when we've won. I haven't said we've won yet.
Okay. So
the question is from a mentality perspective and thinking about the mission is when we win, does that transformation type happen versus not at all calling the shot now that we've won?
Yeah. Well, there are some diseases that have had tremendous progress, and they, relative to others, have won, right? And that's where I think ACS doesn't have that option to conveniently ignore. In fact, we call out specifically where there are inequities in access and inequities in inequitable outcomes for cancer patients. And the type of innovation, like we talked about before, you know, cancer is so sneaky. It's biologically savvy. And then on top of that, it's popping up in, you know, health-related social needs. It's popping up on your credit card. It's popping up in politics. So it's just so pervasive. And I think that's where ACS is one of the few that can really monitor and manage the holistic landscape. But it does mean that our model is not only double bottom line, it's triple bottom line. We're also trying to raise the bar in terms of what we measure for impact, and then really engage others so that they can do more of the right thing.
So I want to pivot a little bit, or pivot back to the with the Texas Accelerator and the fact that you brought it here. I happen to think, in bias in this, that Texas is transforming into the next big bio hub. I actually had some people from J&J on, and the best line was, "Oh, it already is." And I was like, "Ah, oh, I love that. I'm going to quote that."
Yeah.
So, as of the money coming in and the way that you're seeing it, I mean, how do you assess the overall biohealth ecosystem in Texas?
Yeah. I mean, from at least the early research that we did in deciding, to set up the regional hub, we're very encouraged. I think that that's a combination of all of what's already there, meaning, our own granting activity, the fact that you've got such tremendous public sector support for cancer prevention and research. You have $1 billion of venture capital, that's both local and also coming from afar. And then you've got, amazing talent. So it's just, almost going through that same exercise of, well, what's the bottleneck, and how can a player like American Cancer Society, BrightEdge, really catalyze, in areas of greatest impact. And I think also, just seeing what South By has done, and then flocks of people coming in for the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. I mean, you really can be a hub for, much larger conversations. You yourself are a pretty large, geography. I always get shocked when you see the map and then how many states can fit inside Texas.
I will never forget when I moved here, and so we drove from Southern California, and somebody pointed out that El Paso is the halfway mark.
Oh my gosh. That's wild. That's wild. It is the biggest state in the continental US, right?
Yes. Yes. Right. I think Alaska is the only state that's larger, and obviously it's outside the 48.
Right. That would be a long drive.
Yes. I don't think anybody really understands how big Alaska is at times.
Yeah. I guess it all also comes back to mentality and the hunger and the appetite to do big things and big things differently. So that would be, if you ask me, what gets me excited. And now you have ARPA-H there. So it's Texas for Texas and then Texas for the wider ecosystem. I'm very optimistic as to what we'll be able to do there over the next 2 years.
And one of the things that I've observed, this is true in biohealth, I think it's true kind of across the different innovation ecosystem, that the different nodes on the Texas Triangle, there's a lot more to the state than that, but when I think about, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, they have different flavors and different resources and different things that you can leverage. When you were thinking about the accelerator, how are you thinking about leaning into the variation across the different parts of the state?
Yeah. So this is where I think us being that open innovation and doing leading by listening is going to be really key. And I hope that we do some listening tours. We already have, obviously, some great relationships with the universities, MD Anderson, UT Southwestern. We've visited and held several events up at Pegasus Park in the North Texas area. I think it comes back to when we identify both the pipeline of academics and companies coming through the program, and where we can also be a convener of local ecosystem players and really facilitate, right, what is the next phase. There's no question in my mind that there will be a place for, as you say, those different specialties across either the cancer care continuum or the innovation value chain. So either they're going to be on the pointy end of the spear in terms of, great scientific discovery, or maybe they're going to be more in the detection diagnosis, I'm making this up, or the survivorhood, tech-enabled solutions to help survivors and caregivers. But you have essentially, it's kind of like the VA, you've got an ecosystem, a lab that has all of the different parts. You've got great hospitals, you've got urban and rural, you have diverse population, you have all the different types of cancers, and some great partners. So that's kind of where I'm thinking right now. I'm sure that Steve Curtis, our director of new ventures, and the team have additional ideas, and I'm not doing it justice, but all good things.
Well, we're still in the early innings, so like there's a lot of opportunity and feedback that you can get and to see where things can grow.
Yeah.
Well, Alice, this has been a lot of fun. So I always end with the same question. What's next?
What's next? Oh, boy. You know, BrightEdge is investing in innovation for impact. So we are really excited about reporting on our impact performance. We're excited about the accelerators taking flight. And we're excited about, you know, building community.
Fantastic things. And I hope we'll be able to celebrate soon winning the war on cancer.
Yes, me too. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks a lot.
So what's next, Austin? We're glad you've joined us on this journey. Please subscribe at your favorite podcast catcher, leave us a review, and let your colleagues know about us. This will help us grow the podcast and continue bringing you unique interviews and insights. Thanks again for listening, and see you soon.